This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
All right, Lexington, welcome back. You are tuned in to Tech Talks. Thank you for tuning in and teching out with us here at WRFL Lexington. Tonight on Tech Talks, we have a story for you. Are we going to start off with SpaceX, a big explosion in the sky, or we want to save that for later?
I think we'll keep that in our back pocket for a minute.
All right, well, we're going to keep that in our back pocket, something for you to stay tuned in and look forward to as you listen to the show. So in the meantime, what have we got up first?
First, I want to do a breakdown. This is coming from an analysis of the market on Windows 10, and it has been that over the past couple months, we've seen a faster than expected downturn in the number of new Windows 10 devices, which is interesting. Let me say that the other way. It's going down, but it's going down slower than they expect. I guess that's the best way to phrase it.
All right.
You know, they're every time a new product comes out, especially every time something new comes out that is the next large operating system update or with any big software, it's expected to kind of be this curve of adoption, and then that rate of new adoptees
sort of drops off, sort of like a bell curve that you would expect, where, you know, there are the early adopters and then the majority of people have it, you know, in all honesty, with Windows 10, they had it forced upon them.
Yeah, and most people adopted in a 1 to 6 month range.
Mm-hmm. So then after that, you saw a lot more people dropping off, because first of all, if they managed to skip to where they were not forced to upgrade, you know, then most of the time they didn't, because a lot of people did prefer, for example, like something like Windows 7.
And that's fair.
And they never upgraded to 8, and then now all of a sudden Windows 10 is out, and it kind of, some computers were prompted or forced to go through the Windows 10 update. And so when you see something like this happen, it could probably be attributed to a second round of forced updates of people who denied it the first and second time.
It might be, but it might be the sense of something else. And this is where it gets interesting. So Usually with these kind of large operating system updates, especially for Windows, you have the residential users, I guess we can say, people who have their own.
And then the enterprise users.
And then we have the enterprise.
The business owners, the schools, things like that, because they typically do take a lot longer to catch up. Because I know for a fact, in our office here, we're still using Windows 7.
That's right.
We never even went all the way up to 8, and now we're already at Windows 10. And that's just, Windows 8 wasn't really a good office-based operating system. It was more geared towards people. In the fact that
it was a very residential, you're right. It was a very residential operating system. It didn't really have. Maybe it felt kind of. It always felt kind of childish and colorful and playful, and it definitely was inventive and fresh in that way. But it had a tendency to not feel professional, and I think that's why Windows 10 is managing to stave this off. They've already reached their stable new enterprise release, which is surprising that they got to that in under a year. But with enterprise out now, we're actually seeing people transitioning their businesses, transitioning their office spaces over into Windows 10. And so I think that's also the other arm of what's helping stave off this growth rate from falling.
Mm-hmm.
We're now entering the second part
of that bell curve,
of
where
that
it's
sort of
bouncing back up. Which, it is kind of interesting, like you said, to see when something like that happens, you know? Just because it really speaks to how much we, as humans, tend to stay away from change. We don't like when things that we've gotten used to and are used to using regularly have to change. Because we don't like that learning curve, instinctively, you know? And so, it's really interesting to me to see how a lot of people have been resisting Windows 10, and now that's basically all that is available out on the market, and a lot of people like it a lot better than Windows 8.
Yeah.
You know?
And one of the things that I find interesting with this, you say that people are kind of innately against changing things in their life, like operating systems, things like that, whereas and we're going to come up on this here in a second, is that iOS 10 is about to come out. Yeah, and it has kind of the opposite effect with Apple. And
phone OSs. People are so desperate when phone OSs update to get the newest, latest version. And it, you're right, that is kind of a weird natural flip around from the normal tendencies of humans when it comes to change. And as soon as you started talking about iOS, I instantly knew that this is the path you were going on.
Yeah, certainly. So it's interesting to me to see that I guess we think of a desktop computer, a laptop even, as being a little bit more work-related, possibly, I guess you would say. I don't think people are as leery of the bugs that come with the first bleeding edge of new cool phone stuff as they are with the bleeding edge of new cool
computer
desktop
and really
stuff.
It could also be attributed to the fact that a lot of people statistically do not spend nearly as much time sitting at a computer outside of work than they do playing on their phones.
That's
because
fair.
Phones are more accessible. You have more time to explore your phone and find all the little tricks and things that it can do, and things like that. Whereas a computer, you actually have to make time to sit down and be dedicated to, figuring that out in such a way. But, I'm really kind of... This was an interesting article. I'm very glad that you brought this up because it allowed us to sort of look at some of the weird little cultural things that influence our technology.
It is. It's certainly a cultural thing. And I guess where I was going with this is that iOS 10 is about to come out, and we're about to see something really, really cool happen. iOS 10 is going to feature a new development kit called SiriKit. Mm-hmm. And so SiriKit is going to be Apple's normal SDK environment built in with all of the functionality of Siri. So you're actually going to be able to see Siri integrate within third-party apps. So we're talking about...
So like Facebook Messenger, you can actually have Siri, voice dictate your message on Facebook Messenger as opposed to having to use its own native speech recognition. Because I think everyone can recognize that Siri's speech recognition is, typically better than most third-party speech recognitions, like Facebook Messenger's, And so by being able to integrate that, not only are you also bringing up the interactivity in-app, but since Siri's integrated, you can do more with Siri than just say, open Facebook Messenger. You can actually say, send a message from Facebook Messenger and actually just dictate it without even having to open the app, sort of like you would a text message, which is going to be really interesting to see that kind of integration, through all third-party apps like you were talking about.
Yeah, so for a while now we've been able to dictate texts or do things like searching through photos for tags, but now we're going to see new features come in like booking rides through Uber.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
By voice.
Mm-hmm.
Through Siri without even opening the app.
Yep.
We're going to be talking about things like all of your third-party VoIP things. We're talking about Skype. Those kind of things are actually going to be able to directly bring in Siri and have that kind of integration. I don't know. I think the Apple has really been working hard over the past couple of years to reach this point of like a single integrated experience on a phone, which sounds like a bunch of buzzwords. Trust me, I know, but it's that we're talking about a singular experience here that has an impact on the way that you interact with your phone and in the way that you go about your life when everything plays together nicely and you don't have to worry about exactly how your software works. And when you bring down those walls between the software that you have on your phone that all these third parties like Facebook and Google develop and the real heavy hitting tools that you have, things like Siri and Google Now, once you bring down all those walls, you really have the opportunity to do some really, really cool stuff. And I think that's why this is so exciting to me. And I think that's why SiriKit is so cool to me.
I 100% agree. So we just had a caller call in, and he brought up an interesting point going back to the computer and phone update conversation. He actually also said that phone updates have historically been a lot easier. Whenever you get a phone update, it typically makes your phone easier to use, like we're talking about with the Siri integration, for example. Whereas when you get a computer update, typically it makes it a little bit more harder because either they'll move things where you're used to, that have been in the operating system. For example, in Windows, the control panel. Yeah. When Windows 8 came out, they moved the control panel. And ever since 95, the control panel had been more or less an integral part of the operating system that almost everyone knew where it was at. And all of a sudden it's gone and it's been moved somewhere else or it's harder to find. And it really messed with people. And the start menu, the home
that's
screen,
fair.
That's, I think, was a lot of the big kickback against Windows 8.
Luckily
with 8.1, they came out with the home button again, or the start menu button, but still they didn't really get it right till they brought out Windows 10 and had the actual little pop-up menu like what was on.
I'm going to be honest. Yeah. I really like the way that they lay out the menu for the start menu in Windows 10. It's very clean. It gives you the capacity to both have things down one side and the tiles as well. I think that's a good compromise, and they really hit a good chord there. But I was thinking about what you were saying there with the fact that phone updates get easier.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, that for the most part, when you get an update on your phone, they might tweak some things, they might change the visuals a little bit, but I don't see that they really, really, change the guts around on you a whole bunch.
No,
whereas
no.
It's always felt like, and it is, you're right, it really is a hassle sometimes to update your computer's
mm-hmm.
operating system, and there's this concern of, is it going to crash all my files?
I was just about to talk about that as well. With a phone update, typically you've got a backup, and admittedly you can do the same with a computer. You can back up your computer, but a lot of people don't do that just because it's slightly more difficult than having to back up your phone. And so people are less afraid of something messing up their phone because they have, typically more religiously back it up than they would their computer. And so as a result, it's a lot easier to restore a phone from a backup than it is a computer from a backup, should something during an update go wrong. And, I definitely feel that the caller that called in and suggested that to us was 100% also on the head.
Yeah. Or let's be honest here. People aren't more religious with updating their phones and updating the backups on their phones. Most people's phones do some kind of auto-updating.
Well, they have now,
that's why it works.
Yeah.
That's why it's such an effective system.
Mm-hmm. So, well, with that, it is 6:30. We are going to hop off here, take some more music. We're going to give a shout-out to one of our listeners. Thanks for listening in, Will. And so we are going to be back here in a little bit. So thank you for tuning in and teching out with us here on Tech Talks. Keep it locked all the way to the left at your only alternative left, Radio Free Lexington. So with that, we're going to jump right back into the tech and the talking about said tech. Grant, what is up next?
Up next, we're going to talk about the SpaceX event this morning. SpaceX was slated to take off from a launch pad this morning, and at 9:07 Eastern Time, that began a series of smaller and then increasingly larger and louder explosions that completely destroyed their SpaceX rocket that was sitting on launch pad 40 down at Cape Canaveral. And to be honest, the video is pretty
spectacular
visually. It's
one of the better rocket explosions I've seen.
I don't know. I struggle to use the word better with a rocket. It's definitely one of the largest explosions of that kind I've ever seen.
It looks like a large firecracker just exploded on the launch pad.
It does. There were a handful of small explosions that happened, and then the entire rocket column
including the satellite on top, which was mounted because it was going to be a pre-launch check, and it also was lost in the process of this as well.
So the equipment, the rocket was lost, its payload was lost. There were no people aboard. This was an automated mission. There were no people immediately around.
No injuries,
no casualties.
Other than their pride.
But it was a very damaging setback for SpaceX, a company who had just now, you know, in the past 6-12 months, really gotten back up on its feet,
especially,
and was really showing some good movement forward.
Especially seeing as they were actually able to, you know, properly land a rocket for the first time on a barge, and they were able to recover a rocket. And
it was a spectacular success.
You know, after a, what, 5 to 10 failures?
After,
that we'd actually talked about?
I think that was the fourth or the fifth failure to land, to re-land upright. But this...
You know, when you're looking at something like that, if you're having, you know, on your fifth try, you finally were able to get the information from the other four failures to get it right once. And now in conjunction with the four failures and the one correct time, they're going to be able to get more precise about how they're going to land these rockets in order to save them and to keep reusing them. And when we get to that point where rockets are able to be recovered after re-entry and are still usable and functionable within, you know, a large margin of error of safety parameters, then you get to a point where space travel is going to eventually become a lot cheaper. We're going to actually be able to send stuff up into space a lot easier because we're not having to build a, you know, gosh, I don't even, can't even guess off the top of my head how much a rocket would cost, you know?
It's
upwards of 100,
to,
you know, upwards of it, you know, 100,000 at least.
I can't imagine it's not at least in the mid millions.
Okay, fine. We'll say it, you know, something over $1 million just to build something to get you up into space. You know, that's why you've not seen us branching out and doing anything in space. That's why the ISS is still such a small operation. You know, a small mission is because it's so expensive to get things up into space. And you know, for all intents and purposes, most of the time when they send supplies up to ISS, the rockets that they use are just gone. They're collateral. You know?
So here we go. The main thrusters make up the majority of the cost per launch, along with the fuel. And the cost per launch for the space shuttle missions were $450 million.
Yeah.
Per launch. For the cheaper ones. They went all the way up to about $1 billion. So we're talking about, you know, savings on the factor of $500 million per flight.
And that's important. If ever space travel is going to become economical, then it has to be affordable. It has to be, you know, there has to be enough recovery of equipment in order to make it feasible. Because, you know, trains never would have caught on if they didn't invent brakes, for example. If you could jump on a train and it can slow down enough to where you could get on it comfortably, and then it just ran till you got to the end of the line, and then you had to get off because it was going to crash into something, and that was the only way to get that train to stop, they never would have taken off. And I feel like that's an, you know,
oh yeah, if you had to build a new train
every time
you wanted to run on the tracks,
exactly. You know, trains never would have caught on. Same with cars, you know. And you know, when you have one use vehicles like that, it's just not sustainable for you know, constant travel to and from space.
Yeah, no, it's been wildly expensive to get into space so far, and this has been an unfortunate setback for a company that was really starting to turn over and show some really, really great promise. And this isn't to say that you throw out SpaceX altogether. I think SpaceX still has a lot of merit. I think we just have to keep in mind.
See, to me, this seems like a fluke. Like, I'm really curious as to, have they determined what may have caused it? Are they still investigating at this point?
They're still investigating. A lot of questions surrounding exactly why it happened, and why it happened on the ground in pre-launch phase is what I find most curious.
And that's what makes me think that this was an accident. I don't think this has any bearing on SpaceX's ability to launch rockets and land rockets. I think that this was just a one-off fluke, in my opinion. And I'm really curious, like you said, to see when they finally complete the investigation and whether or not they're able to determine the fault. And if the fault happens that it was just some technical malfunction, you know, something that was not, you know, just the one in a million chance that, oh, there's going to be an errant spark, this wire's going to arc from being rubbed raw or something like that, that may have ignited something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think this is, and I'm going to be careful with the wording on this, is going to be a one-off problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
or better yet, I think it's going. This instance is going to be ruled an accident. Would be the better way to phrase this, I think.
Well, actually, I'm going to stick with my wording on this. I think it's going to be a one-off problem because nothing's a one-off problem until you identify why it happened and you take measures to prevent it from happening again.
Okay, fair.
So I think that's what we're going to see. They're going to do a post-mortem. They're going to figure out, oh, it was something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, luckily this was an unmanned craft and it was just an ISS payload. You know, it's all things that can be replaced.
Yeah.
But they're going to do a postmortem. They're going to figure out where they messed up, whether it was temperature based or weather related or just an electronic piece was worn out.
Mm-hmm.
We're still not certain yet. They're still investigating. And that's one of the really difficult parts about an explosion like this. You know,
there's so little left over in order to be able to identify the source of the problem.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, rocket fuel is pretty intense. When it gets ignited, it burns super hot, hot enough to melt most remnants of whatever it exploded from.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the problem is that, you know, the bottom's reinforced so it can take the heat of that jet propulsion.
But the upper column, as we saw through the video, in just the spectacular way that it exploded, honestly, I cannot find a better analogy for it. It kind of looked like the top of a mushroom cloud.
I can understand why. It would lend itself towards that kind of an explosion. It makes sense.
Because the sides are unshielded, like, you know, they're not meant to handle that kind of the pressure.
All the energy is going up and out of the rocket.
Yeah, upwards and outwards, whereas normally when a rocket is being operated, it's having just gravitational force pressing down on it as it's trying to escape the atmosphere. You know, so when we're talking in terms of design, it wasn't designed to handle, you know, the explosion that it happened to it. And I agree with you. I don't think this is going to hurt SpaceX in the long run. So I think we should be seeing a lot more from SpaceX.
Yeah,
and
I think they have a lot of promise.
If I'm not mistaken, doesn't Elon Musk also own that company?
Yeah, that's right.
One of his brain initiatives.
They're working with NASA to get flight readiness certification, which is NASA's go-ahead for manned missions. They're hoping to get that by the end of next year.
Okay.
So here in about the next 12 to 18 months.
We may actually be seeing the first privatized company
delivering
people into space.
Yes.
That's going to actually be a really interesting moment because it's going to mark a turning point from, you know, up until this point, the only people that have been up into space have been NASA approved. They've been Air Force personnel. They've been, you know, researchers or scientists that have been specifically chosen for a mission. Whereas now, once they have that certification, SpaceX could send anyone that they put through the training properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could see anyone go up there. Heck,
yeah.
Elon Musk could be the first one in space, the first private citizen in space.
I could actually see something like that being very possible, that he would go up possibly on an ISS mission, travel up and back with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's certainly a daring man. I don't know if he's that daring.
Yeah, we'll see. That wasn't in his plan to take over the world part two, so.
I don't think so.
All right, so with that, we've kind of exhausted everything we can talk about that on this segment, so we're going to jump back to some music for the next 15 minutes, and we'll be back with you at 15 past the hour. So I think at that point, it would be a great time for us to play 10 for 10 and possibly have a guest play with us. We'll see.
All right.
So with that, keep it locked all the way to the left at your only alternative left, Radio Free Lexington.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Tech Talks. Thank you for tuning in and teching out with us this evening. We are joined here this evening by our awesome production director, Colton, and our amazing music director, Maya, as they join us for tonight's segment of 10 for 10. So, Mr. Grant, with that, I will turn it over to you and let you start away.
All right. 10 for 10 this week. If you haven't been around with us for a while, we actually haven't done this in a bit, but 10 for 10 is us breaking down a list of 10 things that have happened this week, all technology related, and we do all 10 of them in 10 minutes. So,
except this time it's going to be a lot longer, mainly because we have three people playing.
We're going to try to keep it to a minute per piece, but I have no doubt we're going to go past. So let's get started. First one on the docket tonight. Apple CEO Tim Cook has described the European Union's $15 billion back tax as, quote, total political crud.
All right, Colton, you wanna take the lead on that one?
I really don't know much about this.
So do we know anything more about this yeah. tax?
Well, what it was is that the EU had accused Apple of
evading
$15 billion of tax evasion, which is not to be trifled with.
Yeah, that's a number right
that's
there.
That's a number, and that's a big one.
Yeah. I mean, if they have some kind of, like, physical evidence of this stuff, or, you know, if it's not just, like, preliminary investigations, then, you know.
They're actually coming after him for it. Well, this isn't just a hypothetical thing.
They're literally the largest entity on planet Earth. Alphabet, I guess, holds that now.
Yeah.
But they're the second largest. So, I mean, if they thought that they were going to get away with tax evasion,
I mean,
they got Capone, right?
So. Right.
I mean, this is a company with the amount of resources of, like, a small country.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's time for Colton. I'll go next. I think it's really interesting that I'm just like you said, I'm really curious to see where the money's come, you know, supposedly gone, what it's from. Like, is it from iPhone sales, iTunes sales? Because I could see very easily people getting on iTunes and buying music, and then the EU being like, yo, we need to tap that money source now. Because, you know, if they haven't been taxing, you know, sales tax on internet music, you know. Why not? We get charged a
sales tax. Is that Apple's fault? This is speculation, of course.
Yeah.
It's just that the EU didn't. If it's really as simple as the EU didn't tax them, and Apple's like, oh well, whatever. That's
all
totally
right. Grant
useful.
Has some more info for us.
Oh, I was just gonna say specifically leading the charge is Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Out of the group, so that. I don't know if that changes it for you. It's actually...
That just makes me question this whole thing even more.
It really is a strange case driven by... It's really strange that... How does this even happen? How do you not notice
billion
that,
dollars.
Yeah.
Does it.
All right, Maya, it's to you.
I really don't know much about this. I don't think I could add anything intellectual on it. But
speculate wildly.
I don't know. I think that I don't know. If a company is as big as Apple, you know, this is happening.
It makes everything look really sketchy to me. Like something shady is going down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with rumors of like Apple coming out with, you know, supposedly taking away the headphone jack. Maybe the Irish people are just really upset about that, so they're trying to crash Apple before they can take away the headphone jack.
Sure, we'll go with that.
The rumor they're going to go is just their
USB-C.
USB-C?
Yeah. Their lightning connection is what I've read.
So it wouldn't be Apple's specific connector? It would be
the lightning bolt. No, it would be the lightning bolt.
Lightning bolt. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
see, that's I'm waiting
right.
for that
they
day.
Did.
Yeah, and finally, when we all can just have one connector,
yeah.
right?
In the communist future.
Fair enough. All right, Grant, let's take it to number two.
Number two, if you have Dropbox password, it's probably time to change it because 70 million email password combos were leaked this week.
Will go first when you're done.
Because an employee reused their password.
All I have to say is that is the most ironic hack I've ever heard of. that an employee reused his password and therefore was a caused a security loophole
that compromised a billion-dollar company
for what was it, 70 million passwords?
Yeah, that's the number.
Yeah, I'd say mine's probably one of those because it was the older passwords that were targeted. So if you were in high school and you made a Dropbox for high school, like my history teacher made me, then chances are you've been hacked. So the number one thing I can tell you is change your password for your own security's sake, unless it's just full of a bunch of old high school essays.
People reuse their passwords.
Oh, yeah.
Which is where that danger comes in.
Mm. Yeah, and their Dropbox password might be their Gmail password.
Yeah,
Your Gmail account through Google Play is linked to your credit cards in some people's cases, much like your Apple ID is, But that's been my minute, so I'll let whoever else talk now.
I'd just say, going off what you guys are talking about, it freaks me out when, Google Chrome wants to save my passwords for different websites and stuff. Because, just some kind of server that's holding all my passwords, isn't that just as liable to
actually
be hacked
to go off on a tangent on that? When your Google Chrome prompts you to save a password, it actually doesn't, as far as I know, save it anywhere else. It's actually a local thing. So there's a file on your computer that is in your in the Google Chrome directory, if you will, and it just has just a text file.
You can opt to synchronize those, but
most people
they're also encrypted, to a pretty solid standard. So I if there's a place that's gonna be the weak spot, it's not gonna be your browser's encrypted password hash.
Yeah, because just based purely on websites' specifications for what they want for your password, I have a lot of passwords, and being able to remember those all is really hard. So
definitely, Maya, you go ahead.
I just have to say, kids, change your passwords, change them often.
And to take some of the time that you spent with that, I will say there's also a thing is changing them too often. Be careful not to change them and then forget what they are. Because especially being UK students, we have to change our password for our service system every three months.
Have you guys changed it recently?
Yeah.
They've added new specs. Mm-hmm. And so now you can't use anything that's a dictionary word.
It's impressive.
It's really hard
now.
It took me 25 minutes to come up with a new password.
And that's where we're moving away from passwords that are practical, because a password that is practical can be very long and consist of dictionary words, but the important part is that it's
so easily
above
remembered.
All else that you can remember it, and that it's exceptionally long.
Even if it's exceptionally long, most of the time if you do that, you're going to make it off of some kind of pattern on the keyboard, and a pattern is easily hackable.
That's one of the things they try them first.
Your third dog's name something like that. Those things are easy to know once you get to know the person, but if you do it a pattern, somebody can figure that pattern out relatively easily.
All right.
Cool. Moving on to number three.
Number three, Apple is beefing up iCloud. Preempting the iPhone 7 launch, they're offering plans up to 2 terabytes in size.
Maya, do you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, I have an iPhone, and let me just say, I do not use iCloud at all, and I don't know anyone who does.
Especially not to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Exactly.
I'm a college student. Why would I want to pay for
anything? One thing, I don't know if you use Google Drive or not, but
that's
something that, as students of the university, we have, I think, unlimited storage for our personal accounts.
Yep. Which one was it? Was it OneDrive or the Microsoft one that we have? Is that what it was?
Yes, it was that one, and then Google Drive ones, I think both of them now have been upgraded to the point, going off on a weird tangent, that they say unlimited, but actually the amount of space you're capped at is 5 terabytes, but since they assume since they assume that no college kid is going to accumulate 5 terabytes of stuff on their school email account, they just went ahead and labeled it unlimited.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But, I agree with you. I'll go on and start my minute then, bouncing off what Maya said. My parents both also have iPhones, and neither of them use iCloud. Especially, a lot of people stopped using iCloud after the whole hacking incident happened. Yeah. And it's good to see them beefing up security preemptively, but at the same time, at this point, it's too little too late, in my opinion, because a lot of people are already really, so far, iCloud hacked. Dropbox hacked. The only one waiting is Google. And luckily, we've never really heard of any big Google hacks.
No, there's never been a substantial one.
You know, and so it's definitely going to be interesting to see if they can beef it up enough, you know, if going off what we said earlier, if they can learn from the mistake and just make sure that it doesn't happen again. But the thing is that the trust's already been violated with people in iCloud.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard for them to draw those people back in, even especially if they're going to charge money, you know, pay for your security.
I will also say that iPhone users generally, I don't think, are looking for as much storage just because of the not being able to have an SD card. Mm-hmm. So I feel like people who do use Apple products generally don't care about that much storage.
I'd say they're definitely compensating for, like what you said, they don't have SD slots. So mm-hmm. they're trying to compensate with that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. And like you were saying, too, I mean, if you're an Apple user, most likely you have Apple Music, and what's taking up the significant amount of storage on people's phones and whatnot is more usually music. I mean, I don't really take a lot of photos, but
music and photos, I believe, are statistically the number one and two things that will take up space on any person's phone.
Yeah, I mean, if you're shooting like 4K video or something, which I'm not sure if the Apple cameras can do that yet. I know there's certain
their screens can display 4K video, but I don't know if their cameras can take 4K video.
Yeah, so I mean, at some point you're going to be able to, though, inevitably.
I would say the iPhone. If it hasn't happened yet, I would say the iPhone 7 might be on that.
Yeah,
but
that would be helpful to have like some kind of iCloud storage there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right, moving on. What number are we at?
Five.
Cinco.
So a lot of those that were involved with and pro-Brexit are hoping that the intra-union fight between Ireland and the head of the EU, because going back to Apple's taxes and Ireland really leading the charge on that, they're kind of dragging the rest of the EU along, kicking and screaming, into this legal battle. And so there is those that were pro-Brexit, and now that Brexit is happening, I don't know what to call that group, but...
Regretful?
but that group is hoping that this will inspire Ireland to break away from the EU as well, because they've kind of been dragging the EU through the mud on the way to this legal battle with. Does that make sense? If I laid this out well?
So, I mean, before
we go into that, just to provide some context for some of our listeners, in case you hadn't heard, Brexit was a referendum by the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, and it passed by just like 2% of the vote.
Yeah, it was
so
like 2 or 3%.
It really, really split the country, so much so that the Prime Minister David Cameron, he was the Prime Minister at the time.
He's stepping down.
He is resigning as a result of this. So it's been a lot. There's been a lot of turmoil in Great Britain as a result of this, and so from what you're saying, Ireland is dragging the EU into this battle against Apple. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
The Brexit voters are kind of hoping that that Ireland will break off from the European Union.
Because of the larger EU's resistance
to joining them.
To getting in this fight.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, the people who voted for Brexit are sitting there saying, oh, the EU is not backing you in something that you feel you're justified in. You guys should leave.
Yeah.
Cool. I took my minute up. I'll let you guys go. Which one?
All right,
go Colton.
I mean, I'm no economist, I'm no politician, but I don't really care for widespread international organizations that like take power. So, I mean, you know, I don't know what the numbers were before and after Brexit, but to me, I mean, just what I know of Irish people in general, or just gross stereotypes, I guess. They're pretty like independent, steadfast people.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if I, you know, wake up tomorrow and read that Ireland's going to be
leaving the European Union as well.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Maya?
I mean, you know, will the European Union even be a thing in the future? I mean,
that's a serious concern.
It is, especially since Great Britain left.
I mean, and this is I feel like this is such a small thing. Like, fighting a company over taxes is like, I know that Apple is huge, but these are multiple countries with, you know, very powerful people, and I think that
it feels kind of petty.
Yes, and if this is gonna if this is gonna tear Ireland away from the European Union, which has been set in place for so long, then you know what's another thing?
Another country leaving, you know?
Break it.
It's just gonna be the step into the rabbit hole, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, moving on.
Okay. Number six, you're going to love this.
I can tell.
They are trying, Google is trying to street view all of the Faroe Islands, which is an archipelago under the Danish in the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
And how they're going about it is they're strapping body cameras to sheep. Go.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't.
That's like the coolest thing I've heard all day, dude. That's awesome.
I want to see videos of these sheep with cameras on them.
I definitely want to see some of that footage.
Now, I am finding the sheep video, and I'm going to be linking it through our Facebook page, so you can see it there.
Sweet.
Oh my God, look at that. That's amazing.
I mean, that's totally makes sense. I'm sure the PETA people are like, shaking in their boots, wondering whether or not they're like hurting these sheep, and I'm sure that they're not. So that's awesome. Use your resources, man.
This is the future.
All right,
the photos
are up.
So they're gonna have. Like,
I knew there was a reason I didn't like the Danish people. Why?
They're gonna stitch together all the footage that these sheep collect.
Over the next couple months.
That is gangster.
Street view the entire awesome. Island from the highest peaks to the bottom of valleys.
You know, I just gotta
put
power.
It on goats.
I'm gonna throw this
all the stuff off the side of the mountain.
All right, I gotta throw this out. That's funny. I will admit. Just to think, who the guy at Google who has gonna have to sit there and deal with that and actually have to deal with cropping out other sheep in the flock?
I'd like to meet the dude who pitched it. Who pitched this?
Hey guys, let's take all the sheep in the Daneland and put cameras on their back.
We're gonna make them useful. It's like, I don't like wool sweaters, and we're gonna make a use out of these animals.
But seriously,
they ate our grass.
What if this works? I mean, long term, the idea that you can strap cameras to livestock and just have them wander around.
You could do it to all kinds. You could do it to deer in the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah,
legitimately.
Yeah,
you could do
that.
It'd
be a great way to video some car crashes.
You could do, like you said, you could do that for any type of animal that's large enough to hold this camera,
mm-hmm.
or any kind of device that would like help map out GPS.
Better yet, an idea just hit me. Tour Daneland in a flock of sheep using virtual reality headsets. So you're just walking around with a flock of sheep exploring these islands.
Like,
oh, we need to move on.
I
want to
VR and be an eagle and like fly around somewhere, dude. That's awesome.
But seriously, that's something that could happen.
So cool. You could be a dolphin.
Right?
You could like put on VR and then just like swim around as
swim around with dolphins, man.
That would be the tightest.
All right, so we got to move on. Let's go.
Welcome to the future, everybody. You heard it here first. Number seven, there are startups. The CIA has money in startups, and that's under scrutiny right now because apparently there's a lot of weird laundering happening through these faux tech startups that the CIA is using for surveillance.
We're going to have fun with this one, boys and girls.
I don't even know where to start. This is just such a mess.
I do. Let's start by saying that is shady. Yeah. That is the most shady thing I've ever heard.
Shady is the CIA's middle name.
Like,
that's fair.
Like, that just took Slim Shady and squared him and turned him into, like, a CIA agent. That's how bad that is to me. Like, the fact that we have to pay taxes, that's U.S. tax money that is going to the CIA through the congressional budget, and then the CIA, once they get control of the money, is saying, all right, we're going to put these in tech startups. And as far as I can tell, I don't know of any benefit of it. I don't know why they're doing that. It can't be in U.S. startups because the CIA is not permitted to operate in the borders of the United States.
Oh, this is happening in a California startup, like in Qtel?
So
they're developing military tools.
So the company is based That right there, I think, is a violation.
In Silicon Valley.
If the company's based in Silicon Valley and the CIA is investing in them, that's
Where
an operation.
Are you getting that the CIA can't?
That's their thing. They're not.
I don't feel like that's. I don't know. I don't feel like that's true.
Well, okay, maybe. I'm sorry. That's their that's their clandestine service. That that is the part that can't operate.
I mean, I don't know. It makes sense to me that the CIA is investing in some kind of tech startups. I mean, any kind of espionage technology, you know, cyber espionage is. I'm sure it's just like even more crazy than what they show in movies.
Oh yeah,
less dramatic, but more like. Just in depth and way more of a risk than people even think about on a daily basis, which is already a lot.
Oh yeah. Maya?
I think that the government investing in privatized companies is just wrong all the way around, like especially with private prisons.
Well, that's over. That's going to be over soon.
That's
though.
Ending.
Was that the Supreme Court?
DOJ is shutting that
DOJ,
down.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, the history with that is You know.
Yeah, I mean that's a big step forward in centralizing certain aspects of our culture.
Yes.
For sure. I mean, but in terms of I mean, I guess they're not CIA isn't a military operation. It's part of
gathering
of the government. So like, I mean, them investing into privatized firms is just something we've done.
Once you said that, I'm going to take another 30 seconds on this really quick, because once you said that, I remembered that there were different branches in the CIA, and the big one that most people think about of being spies and spooks is the National Clandestine Service. Mm. And I realized that there's also a support division, and it would make, like you said, make sense that if they were investing in tech startups for that support division to get supporting technologies for their, you know, for
right,
their staff.
Right, yeah. So, see, I mean, they're not all like, it's not all black ops and, and spies and stuff. CIA does all kinds of different.
It makes me, like Maya said, I get a little, you know, finicky whenever the government's investing in private stuff. So we'll move on after that.
Number 8, you guys are going to love this, and it's something we finally gotten to the list of all of the, like, crazy political nonsense. Instagram. Now you can pinch and zoom, which hasn't existed at all. How have they gotten away with this? Now that I think about it,
Instagram.
Yeah, I don't either. So I really don't have a whole lot.
Who wants to start off on this one?
This is the future. Okay. this is what I've been waiting for.
You pumped?
I'm so excited. How
have they gotten away with this?
I don't understand. And like, especially with like my mom, I'll like show her a picture and be like, "Look at this." She's like, "I can't even see it." I'm like,
"I would zoom if I could."
I'm sorry. I've legit screenshot Instagrams and then like open them in my photos so I could zoom in.
Oh man,
that's ridiculous.
I know.
No more.
What a horrible life.
Yeah.
I lead.
Yeah.
Hashtag. Epitome of first world problems. Colton, you got anything to add? I don't even have an Instagram, man.
I'm glad that I can now like see Kim Kardashian's butt really, really well.
Gosh.
Like, you know, you can just zoom right in on it. Just
I don't
use Instagram, dude.
Moving on to number 9.
Number 9. Uber generated $450 million in revenue over the last 2 years through SafeRide. SafeRide was their way of making back the cost of doing background checks. That's something that we actually haven't really discussed much before, is that Uber in 2014 started doing background checks.
On its drivers.
And so they've been slowly recouping that in the form of a dollar fee.
Whenever you use an Uber, which is honestly kind of smart, because I hate to say, an extra dollar to ensure that your driver has passed a background check, I think anyone would be okay with that.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
Not to mention, I also read an article, since we're on the topic of Uber, that they were actually bleeding money. That they're heading into a big financial crisis here soon. And I'm kind of curious to see, is this part of that? Have they spent too much money on background checks?
I was talking to an Uber driver the other night, and he's been in the business for a long time, and he owns his own private transportation business. He was talking about how there are certain rewards that drivers receive for when they are signed up by another driver. So,
okay.
Like, say you work...
So, like a recruitment fee.
Yeah. So, okay. you work for your first week, you get $150 extra reward, you make $100. The next week, you I don't remember exactly how it goes, but you know, you can understand how you get a reward for the first like 2 weeks you work there, and then after the third week, you're not making anywhere near as much money as you made in those first 2 weeks. So then they quit. So their driver retention is horrible. It's like terrible. Because most, about 60% of the Uber drivers that you like meet with are within their first 3 weeks. So,
Maya?
I think that background checks on Ubers are super important. I speak as a person who has used Uber, and been scared. I did not know that there were background checks, but I've heard horror stories.
Oh, yeah. Everyone has.
Yeah. It's great. Wow. Good job, Uber.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So last up on the super long edition of 10 for 10.
All right. IBM's Watson is sorting through hundreds of film clips to create what it will deem the algorithmically perfect movie trailer.
Yeah, they already did that, right? Is that not come out yet?
I think that was past tense. I missed that.
Yeah.
They just finished that this
right,
week.
Right, it's the trailer for, I can't remember the name of this movie, but it's about, like...
Morgan,
right. Yeah, it's about some kind of artificial intelligence. I think it's similar to Ex Machina.
Yeah.
If anybody has seen that. Some kind of, like, dark, noir, indie sci-fi film about artificial intelligence. So, yeah, I had seen something about that. I hadn't really read. So they just gave it clips of this film. Mm-hmm. Is that what it says?
It analyzed hundreds of horror, thriller, sci-fi trailers.
Oh, and pulled from those aspects?
And pulled from those aspects to assemble the trailer from the movie.
That's so scary.
Sorry, every kid in college right now who's like, I really want to make it in the business.
Yeah. Boom, you're done.
Too bad computers are taking over.
Right? We couldn't stop at our factories. We had to computerize the computers, man.
Computers.
Well, I haven't seen this trailer yet. I'd seen the headline for that article, but I haven't seen the trailer. I'd like to watch it.
It's interesting, you know, given all the ad algorithms that have been getting in the news lately, like Facebook, there's been a lot of stuff running around on Facebook with their advertising algorithms.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is another version of that. Definitely it is. And it's really going to be curious to see how much of marketing CS people start merging into the marketing business because of all these algorithms. They're starting to use predictive algorithms of how can we get our product to reach the most amount of people on social media.
Oh, yeah. Every day. We're going to see more and more computer and computer science get melded into the way marketing works.
It's just going to be fascinating to see how society over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, I would say, if not, you know, I'll extend that a little bit, 8 or 9 years, has just revolutionized just thanks to social media. You know, we're more connected now than we've ever been.
Oh, yeah. It's very crazy. Formational. To the way that we're going to move forward socially.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say that there's some things, though, that you just can't have a computer do, even if you give it, like, every accountable...
Oh, yeah.
So just, like, artistic things.
Yeah.
I mean, it can make a movie trailer that... But is it going to be a trailer that builds hype?
Actually...
Is it going to be a trailer that actually showcases the right parts of the movie?
Seen some places, though, to counter that point, where they've actually gave a computer and just said... draw a picture. They wouldn't let it have any access to the internet, and it just came up with, admittedly, some form of pattern, but it was considered art. You know, and it was the first piece of art created by an art, you know, non-human. And, you know, things like that are just really big milestones that don't, you know, we don't really pay attention to nowadays because it's on some click hole in Facebook. But, like, 20 years from now, it's going to be in textbooks, like, on this, you know, this computer was the first computer to make a piece of art. It'll be like a side note on the textbook, but still, it'll be there, you know. Well, with that, we've made it through 10 for 10. Thank you, Colton, and thank you, Maya, for joining us.
This was fun.
This is the kind of stuff that we love doing on Tech Talks. We love having guests. We love having panels because the discussion just gets a lot more richer with the more people you add in. So with that... thank you again for tuning in and teching out. We are going to go out to some music, and then we're going to hand it over to Grace so that she can play music. Oh, she's shy, everybody. So make sure you give her lots of calls and tell her what a great job she's doing. So with that, everyone, we will catch you next week. Thanks for tuning in and teching out. This is WRFL Lexington.